Just how does James Bond, a sexist, misogynist dinosaur, a relic of the Cold War, to use the words the scriptwriters on GoldenEye so tellingly put into M's mouth, survive in the popular imagination more than 50 years after his literary birth? What does it mean when Mary Sue stalks the landscape of the imagination, blasting holes in the plot with a Walther PPK? Or the P99 Bond upgraded to in Tomorrow Never Dies? If we're going to understand this, perhaps we ought to start by looking at Bond's dark shadow, the villain. In Search of Mabuza. Bond is, if you judge him by his work, a nasty fellow, and not one you'd choose to lend your car to. In order to make this rough diamond glitter, it is necessary to display him against a velvet backdrop of darkest villainy. If you strip the Bond archetype of the bacchanalia, glamorous locations and fashion snobbery, you end up with an unappetizingly shallow, cold-blooded executioner, the likes of Adam Hall's Quiller or James Mitchell's Callan, only without the breezy cynicism, or indeed any redeeming features at all. The role of adversary is thus a critical one in sustaining the appeal of the protagonist. Fleming set out to depict a hard-edged contemporary world where the usual black-and-white picture of the pre-war thriller had blurred and taken on some of the murky grey-on-grey ambiguity of the Cold War era. Bond was the knight in shining armour, fighting for virtue and the free world against the dragon. Be they Mr. Big, Dr. No, Auric Goldfinger, or the looming shadow of Bond's greatest enemy of all, Ernst Stavro Blofeld, number one of Spectre, the special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion. It's interesting to note that Blofeld assumed his primacy as Bond's number one enemy only in the movie canon. Fleming originally invented him while working on the screenplay and novel of Thunderball, and used him subsequently in On Her Majesty's Secret Service and You Only Live Twice. Prior to these later books, Bond typically tussled with less corporate enemies, Soviet stooges, unregenerate Nazis, and psychotic gangsters. Blofeld was born out of mere corporate expediency. Rather than demonize the Soviets and reduce their potential audience, the producers of the film From Russia with Love appropriated Spectre as the adversarial organization. With the success of Thunderball, the fourth of the films, Blofeld moved front and center and acquired a life of his own that far exceeded his prominence in the novels. Arguably, Fleming's death in 1964 freed up the movie series to diverge from their original author's plans. And so Blofeld may be seen as a demon of necessity, conjured up from the vasty deep in order to provide Bond with a worthy adversary. It was not always so. Back at the turn of the 20th century, around the time that the British spy thriller was gradually cohering out of the mists of the Penny Dreadful and the literature of suspense, via the works of John Buchan and Erskine Childers, not to mention the tangential contributions of Arthur Conan Doyle by way of Sherlock Holmes, there was no dualistic vision of the great champion confronting the villainous heart of evil. There was no mighty champion. We were on our own against the masters of night and mist, the great and terrible supercriminals. Professor Moriarty, Holmes's nemesis, the Napoleon of crime, was but one of these. Fantomas, the 1911 creation of Pierre Souvestre and Marcel Alain, is another. The emperor of crime, Fantomas was a master of disguise and an agent of chaos, not to mention standing astride Paris in black mask, top hat and tails in the posters for the 1913 movie of the same name, an icon of decadent wealth and criminal chaos. Nor was he alone. Guy Boothby's 1890s supervillain Dr. Nicola fits the bill too, right down to the fluffy lap cat and the fiendish plans. But perhaps the root of Bond's nemesis can be found in his full-fledged form somewhat later and somewhat further to the east. In the guise of Dr. Mabuza,